You're listening to Chemistry in Its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
Hello, this week, vegetarian gladiators, red fireworks, and a mineral mistaken for barium. They're all under strontium's spotlight. Here's Richard Van Orden.
In 1787, an intriguing mineral came to Edinburgh from a lead mine in a small village on the shores of Loch Sunnet, Argyll, in the western highlands of Scotland. At the time, the stuff was thought to be some sort of barium compound. It was 3 years later that Scots-Irish chemist Adair Crawford published a paper claiming that the mineral held a new species, including a new chemical element. Other chemists, such as Edinburgh's Thomas Hope, later prepared a number of compounds with the element, noting that it caused a candle's flame to burn red, where barium compounds gave a green colour. And in 1808, Humphrey Davy, in London, isolated the soft silvery metal of the new element using electrolysis. The Scottish village was called strontian, the mineral found there, strontianite, and the new element, strontium. So it seems there never was an eminent Professor Stront commemorated by element number 38. Today, whenever you see a firework light up in brilliant crimson, or a red flare smoking its way around a football stadium, you're looking at the light emitted from electrons transiting between energy levels in nitrate or carbonate salts of strontium. Strontium is most famous for that red glow in a flame, but as a metal, it behaves like its reactive group 2 neighbours, beryllium, magnesium, calcium and barium. It's soft and silvery when freshly cut, but this sheen quickly turns yellow when exposed to air, as the metal readily reacts to form oxides. And like other reactive alkaline earth metals, natural strontium is always found locked away in mineral compounds. Apart from the previously mentioned strontianite, which we know as strontium carbonate, there's also the beautiful sky blue celestite, strontium sulfate, which was discovered in Gloucestershire in 1799, where the locals were using it as gravel for paths in ornamental gardens. Apart from colouring fireworks, we don't have much call nowadays for strontium compounds. Strontium carbonate, notably, is found in cathode ray tubes in old television sets. One of strontium's isotopes, strontium-90, has a more sinister reputation. It's a radioactive beta emitter, produced by nuclear fission, with a half-life of 29 years. Created by nuclear tests from 1945 to the early 1970s, strontium-90 made its way from the air to grassland, cow's stomachs, dairy products, and, as 1950s studies showed, into children's milk teeth. It collects in bones too, being of a similar size to its group 2 neighbour calcium ions. The nuclear reactor accident at Chernobyl in 1986 also threw strontium-90 into the air. Nowadays, it's used as a radioactive tracer in cancer therapy. Still, strontium's close relation to calcium has made it a modern treatment for treating osteoporosis, as the salt strontium ranilate, using non-radioactive isotopes, of course. Because strontium ions are roughly the same size as calcium ions, they bind tightly to calcium-sensing receptors. It seems that this stimulates the formation of new bone and prevents old bone from being broken down. And tracing strontium isotope levels in bone has allowed analytical chemists to come up with all sorts of conclusions about our past ancestors' diets, knowing that plants tend to be higher in natural strontium than meat. In 2007, for instance, Austrian researchers hit headlines by comparing strontium and zinc levels to support the hypothesis that Roman gladiators were vegetarians who ate mainly barley, beans, and dried fruit.
Chemistry World's Richard Van Orden, wrestling gladiator style with the story of strontium. Next time, we've heard of running through treacle, but what about this proposition?
Could a man walk across a swimming pool filled with mercury? Don't ask me how the conversation had reached this point, but being surrounded by friends who would, it is fair to say, describe themselves as science illiterate, I knew it was up to me, the token scientist around the table, to give the definitive answer. No, I confidently said, adding rather smugly, it is nowhere near dense enough. The next morning, I was rudely awakened by my ringing mobile. Not for the first time, I was wrong.
And you can find out exactly how wrong Fred Campbell was at his dinner party when he unlocks the chemical secrets of quicksilver, otherwise known as mercury, on next week's Chemistry in Its Element. I hope you can join us. I'm Chris Smith. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Chemistry in its Element is brought to you by the Royal Society of Chemistry and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information and other episodes of Chemistry in its Element on our website at chemistryworld.org/elements.